step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 622. My name, as it was as I woke up this morning, is Lisa Shepps. I am joined by my wonderful, beautiful, energetic co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Remember, everybody, during the pandemic, which is now, we are pre-recorded and homegrown. We'll be right back.
Raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Let's raise one more glass to the life that we shared, to the bond that we broke, and the will we prepared, and the money we made, and the dreams that we dared to. God, how did we end up here?
Remember where we started?
It is Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021. On the show today, we have Austin Playhouse and their show, The Battlefields of Clara Barton. And of course, Nicole and I will discuss the world of theater and in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and anywhere else we want to talk about. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Nicole, that was a song called What Have We Got to Lose from a new musical called Breathe. And those people we were listening to were Brian Stokes Mitchell and your best friend, Kelly O'Hara.
Well, I mean, I did just say this beforehand to you, those two together, like there's some dulcet tones, like they're meant to sing together.
Yep, they are. This show, which was written by Timothy Allen McDonald, made a, what's the word I'm trying to come up with? It's
debut?
Online debut. Yes, thank you. In May. And this is from Playbill. It says, Breathe consists of five interlocking suites and examines the impact of COVID-19 on five relationships. In addition to Kelly O'Hara and Brian Stokes Mitchell, it also has Patty Murin and Colin Donnell, Matt Doyle and Max Clayton, Danae Benton, and Ruben J. Kanabahal. And boy, now I'm confused about how this is written. At T. Oliver Reed and Josh Davis.
Lot of people.
It's a lot of people. It explores five different couples. So it's 10 people.
I was like, I guess you need a lot of people for
Yeah. I did not get to see it, but the music is fun. The musical original cast album was just released. It can be found on the iTunes and other places.
I love Brian Stokes Mitchell.
Me too.
He just makes me happy, even when he's not singing, but woo, he can sing.
I tend to like anybody with three names that isn't somebody that killed a president.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Actors Equity Association, you remember them?
Yes.
They just came out with their rules. I mean, they're starting to now figure out how to reopen. They just came out with their rules for touring.
Yes, I know. I was sitting in on some combos and knew this was going to be announced and was like, woof.
Well, and we have some interesting issues, especially here in the state of Texas, because one of the requirements is that all traveling company members be fully vaccinated. And that poses problems in the state of Texas because our governor has said we can't do that.
Yes, not just our state, some other states too. So it's true. When you're going everywhere, it makes traveling a little difficult.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with all that. I mean, I think that that may be something that that gets escalated up through the system. The other thing that one of the other rules is they can have absolutely no interaction between the performers and audience members, which makes complete sense to me.
Complete sense. I understood that.
And so in this, and this is probably something you knew that you knew this, this is in this article, which came from the New York Times, they specifically call out the state of Texas and Dallas specifically, and that Wicked is going to start in August.
So, and on top of it, so it, interestingly enough, I think I was talking to you about this. A lot of the Broadway tours, when they restart up, are starting on the tour in the Texas area, with Wicked being one of the first, My Fair Lady, September 14th, like all about when Broadway is starting back up too. So it is interesting. A lot of them are in our state.
Yeah. Yeah. And we should tell our audience, if they don't know, you have, you work as a press representative, and you work with a lot of these Broadway touring shows. So you have a lot of information.
I do. I work a lot with, I'm more in like the Houston market, and my colleague is more of the Austin, but yes, I do. I get to sit in on some of these marketing meetings and with the creative teams, and it's kind of exciting and fun.
Yeah. So is there any like little tidbit that, that you can talk about that could be interesting to our audience?
Actually, yes. And this is public news, because I read about it in the paper. I found this interesting when I was on a call with the creative team of Hadestown recently, that they were discussing, they have, you know, all these Broadway shows have to remount the show and rehearse, and they can't all get into their spaces. They're redoing theaters. So how do you do this? Well, they're doing what they normally do, similar to the tours. And most tours start off in Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York. And what their three Broadway shows are going to Schenectady, New York, Hadestown is one of them, and going to do all of their rehearsals, all of the remounting of the show, all of the new press assets, everything in Schenectady. It's a $20 to $25 million economic impact for Schenectady and Albany area on top of it. And the shows are Hadestown, Ain't Too Proud, and then a third one that they're going to announce this week of a new musical. So I'm kind of excited. They're like mounting the new musical there to move to New York. I'm finding this fascinating.
Do you know anything about, you don't know what the new musical is?
No, I don't know what the new musical is either. And I will send this this article on this, what they're doing in Schenectady from the Times Union there, that talks about the dates and the shows and how they remount and do things. And it's, they said this week, we're supposed to know the title. I'm on bated breath myself.
Yeah. I'm surprised that there's, that we haven't heard anything about something up and coming. Is, I mean, do you think that it's one of the things
that's where I was like, where did this come from? The dates for it are world title. It's a world premiere. It's announced next week, this week, and it'll be October 2nd through November 11th that they'll work things.
Well, that's cool. Well, let's actually, a natural segue to this conversation is just talk about, you and I went to the season release of Texas Performing Arts at Bass Concert Hall.
How great was it to sit in a theater, by the way?
It really was. It really was wonderful. It was
you
socially
and I were
distanced.
Very, we were socially distanced and on the opposite side. So I was sitting there by myself, like tearing up. There was nothing going on in the stage, but to sit inside a theater.
Yeah, that's great. And they had it set up as they typically, so in past years, this event happened on stage, that we'd all be sitting on stage and we'd be looking at a screen on usually the stage left side. This time we weren't, because they needed to socially distance. So we were in the orchestra, but behind, in front of us was lectern that Bob Bursey stood at and a screen, but they left everything open behind the screen. So there was no masking, and they lit it. So you could see the ladders and you could see some of the fly system.
I was like, the fly space and the lights. It was so cool. It was comforting. It was like a warm blanket on me.
It really was. So what did you think about the announcement? Well, I want to say one thing first of all. So they talked about the Broadway in Austin series, which we've already talked about on this show. But the first thing that's going to happen on Broadway in Austin is Hamilton in December, a 2-week run.
Mm-hmm. It's coming here before Houston. How about them apples?
And it's the same company. We had different companies last time it was here.
It is. It'll be the Philip cast. But yes, it comes here before Houston, Lisa. I thought you'd be very excited about that.
I'm very excited. And we've talked about that, is that Austin is starting to get the A-level shows and the A-level cast. So I'm very excited. And as a reminder, the other things that are coming are The Lion King, Hades Town, thumbs up, Tootsie, thumbs up, thumbs sideways. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You know, I'm not all that excited about that one, but
I am.
But I'm going to watch it. Summer, the Donner Summer Musical, or as Matt Tamanini from Broadway Today, he always says, Summer colon the Donna Summer Musical. and Mean Girls, which I know makes you happy because you really
Mean
love
Girls
that.
Makes me happy.
So what did you think of the season that Bob Bursey announced?
So it's very interesting because tours and regulations are just figuring things out and they've just solved it. Everybody isn't completely booked. So we only got really more will keep being added. So that has me curious. But the most thing I'm excited about is Alvin Ailey. I love Alvin Ailey. I, you know, the high school performing arts I went to in Dallas, we were the very first organization to ever perform a piece of Alvin Ailey outside of his company because he was connected to the school and alumni. And we did that on the 10th anniversary and it changed my life. I took a lot of different classes that were from Alvin Ailey and African dance classes. He inspired, I'm just so excited. And I can't believe it's been since 2009 that Alvin Ailey has been to Austin.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very,
just, wow.
Very excited about that as well. That's going to be in March of 2022. I did along the same dance lines, Ballet Hispanico is coming.
Yes.
Which is also pretty incredible.
Two big ones.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought is interesting is Bass Concert Hall is going to be reopening with Stomp at full capacity. In August?
I think that sounds right. August. It's odd. September.
It's not. I'm looking at the press release right now and I don't see it on the press release, but I do remember him talking about it. I'm also very excited about the stuff that they're doing with Fusebox.
The local community connection was amazing.
Yeah. And they've got this thing called the B-side. It's Negro Folklore from the Texas State Prisons that was done as an album.
And there were interviews.
Yeah, and it looked amazing to see that. And then there's another thing called Untitled Toast. So they're going to be doing a workshop while they're working on stuff during that. I thought that was in conjunction with Fusebox, but it is not.
Is that the one with the Worcester Group?
It is with the Worcester Group.
Yeah, which you and I were both excited to see the Worcester Group.
I was. Now, if my memory serves me correctly, they performed in New York down in Soho at the Performance Garage, which is where I did my show called A Rule of Three with, among other people, Steve Buscemi, which is this wacky, crazy avant-garde show.
I knew you worked with Steve Buscemi, but now this all makes sense in this big circle. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure the Worcester Group used to perform at the Performing Garage. I could be wrong because, you know, memory is selective. So don't write me if I'm wrong.
That sounds right, though, Lisa. They're a very fascinating group that has had a really interesting history. Just powerful. And I'm excited about them coming here.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking for the piece that the pieces that Fusebox is doing. But I'm really happy with one of the things that Bob Bursey, and we should say, and we've talked about it on this program because we've had it on this program before, he got this job right before the pandemic started. So
it was almost like on top of each other. It was so crazy.
I can say that programming in this era has got to be very, very challenging for an organization like Texas Performing Arts. So the thing they're working, one of the things that they're working with Fusebox is an off-campus event. It's going to be done at the Blue Genie Art Bazaar on Airport. Yes. It's called the Plastic Bag Store. It's an installation and immersive film, which I find interesting.
It is, which is so funny. It reminds me of my roommate in Chicago was a performance art major with the Art Institute. And it similar reminded me of like a piece she did in the early 90s. And I was like, this is fascinating. And it made me want to reach out to her.
Did you?
See, it was already starting conversations and it didn't even happen yet.
I'm hoping that that they're able to fill in some of the blanks that they did not announce, so that maybe the season is a little bit more robust. But in relation to what we've been going through over the past year, I think they've done a really great job.
I was surprised we had that many titles announced for being in the world that we've been in for the last year. So it's exciting.
Yeah,
It was enjoyable just to be out. It was great to see you. It was exciting to see other people excited about the arts, and it was excited to sit in an empty theater.
It was. And we did not do it because we left, but I know that our Amy Layton and Todd, who were sitting with us, went up and looked at the new seats in the balcony.
You really could see the sightline difference and the what they've redone with the two balconies, like the 2 second floors. That's what I was about to say.
I like the 2 second floors. There was something else that was on my list that I wanted to talk about that was apropos of all this, and I cannot remember what it is, and it doesn't look like I can see it here. I will tell you this, that I am very much looking forward to Hamilton, because my view of Hamilton has changed since the movie has come out. I think it'll be a different live experience. I think that I might be more forgiving versus my normal hypercritical self.
That's interesting. And why do you say that, Lisa?
I can't answer
know.
That.
You don't know, okay.
I can't answer that, but first of all, I understand the piece a lot more,
right?
Because I've seen it multiple times and I've talked about it. And so I've got a little bit more, I know more about the piece itself. And this is something interesting that when we go see shows, like for instance, what was that? The movie in the bus with Sutton Foster.
Violet.
So I say on this show quite often that I'm not a fan of Violet. And I do that because I've only seen it once. I saw it on Broadway. I did not like it, but I don't know a lot about it because I haven't read it. I haven't done anything other than see it the one time. So it'd be interesting. So I say that because it's possible that I've missed stuff that I didn't see before.
Well, that was me with Pippin. I've never liked Pippin. I always liked the music, but I never liked Pippin, no matter how many times I saw it. And then I gave it another chance with Patrice Miller. And I'm so glad I did, because I enjoyed everything about that production. So
yeah. Patina Miller was amazing. I will tell you this, that I wasn't crazy about her in The Good Fight or The Good Wife when she was just acting.
You and I talked about that a lot. We didn't like her character all the time in that. No,
we did. She's coming back, or the good fight is coming back, but we'll talk about that later. Or no, we're not going to talk about that at all.
And my Kush Jumbo, I think, is gone now from it.
Yes, but I just saw Kush Jumbo has her own series.
Oh, well, that's even more exciting.
It's just about to open and she looks very interesting. She's, if, It happened very quick. Today, while I was watching television this morning, I thought, while I was watching the news.
She's about to do her all-female Hamlet in the UK.
Awesome. Is she playing Hamlet?
I believe so.
Cool.
I believe it's all-female, but she's playing Hamlet, yes.
Awesome. Well, speaking of the UK, and we'll talk about this last thing before we take a little break, is your friend Boris Johnson and my friend Andrew Lloyd Webber have been fighting.
They have entertained me. I just have to tell you, it's not laughing matter, but I've needed some entertainment.
But I will tell you that Andrew Lloyd Webber has really showed his stripes during this thing. And he, you know, so we talked about on this show that they were going to open Phantom. Then Boris Johnson said, no, we're going to hold opening for another 2 weeks or so. And then he said, but we'll do something special for you, ALW. But Webber said, no, it's all or nothing. I don't want anything special. So, we won't open, like everybody else. So I thought that had a lot of integrity behind it.
And I think he also did say then Cinderella would open and they would do the 50%, and instead he'll just take the cut out of his own pocket for the loss.
He did indeed say that.
Which was a few days later. Now I should say, all in between this, he kept telling Boris, I'm suing you and the government.
Well, let's take a little break. And I think that, during this, you know, going into this break, we're going to listen to Bettina Miller sing, you Magic. Look frenzied, you look frazzled, peaked as any alp. That is on the right track. I had to sing it to get the title.
That's okay.
So here it is. We'll catch up with you guys on the other side after the break.
You look frenzied, you look frazzled.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and
Nicole.
And
Nicole.
Good. I was trying to stump you.
Just going to keep answering. And Lisa and Nicole.
You're listening to us on Co-op Radio, streaming live at koop.org. We are pre-recorded. But I will say, for only just a couple more months, I'm going into the studio tonight to be retrained on working back in the studio. We have some new equipment.
I was wondering, you keep saying next month, so you got to get to those dates.
Yeah, August. So I'm going in to do my training for the next 3 days so that I may be able to train other people. Well, I must say that, I get a little hard-headed in my opinions of things. And this is theater.
I believe both of us are guilty of that.
I believe so as well. So this is theater tangential. So you've no doubt heard of the TV series called Pose, which has been around for the past 3 years.
Absolutely.
I have often said that I'm not a big fan of. I just lost the word.
I don't know which word you're looking for.
I've always said that I'm not a big fan of camp, and therefore not a big fan of the drag of watching drag shows and things like that. And so I watched the first 5 minutes of the show, and it's, you know, it's all in the ballroom and it's very kind of campy, and they go in and steal clothes from a museum. And I said, I don't think I'm going to like this. So I shut my mind to it.
That makes me sad.
The other day I was having lunch with Shane Wally, who is a trans activist here in town and a wonderful person. And Shane told me that I should give it another chance. I don't get it. Meaning Lisa doesn't get it. Give it another chance. So I've been watching it. Oh my God, what an amazing piece of work it is. MJ Rodriguez, who stars in it, one might remember she did Little Shop of Horrors with George Salazar. And it was a battle of the little shops with the white cast on the East Coast and the diverse cast on the West Coast. Oh my God, what's his name?
Billy Porter.
Billy Porter also stars in it and is amazing.
There's a lot of people in it. It's a heavy hitting cast.
and the largest trans cast of anything, anybody. And as I go and look at it, it talks mostly of the ballroom world, which
I was about to say, it really covers the ballroom culture, which I don't think people know enough about, and how influential it is within the queer community, the drag community. Like, it's so much more than just this go out party thing.
Big time. And again, you know, it's not necessarily cultural appropriation, but voguing began in the ballrooms, not with Madonna.
Right. And so, I think people also, they hear ballroom and they think it's all like the cha-cha and the rumba. And I'm like,
Anyway, but I also think it does such a great job of showing the trans experience, and specifically trans women of color, of which I cannot empathize with that culture, because I'm not a trans woman of color, but I'm a trans woman. And so there are some parallels. And I think they've just done a great job of talking about trans people in the, it takes place, the first season is in the late 80s when everybody was dying. AIDS was a death sentence. And it's just amazing. And I'm so sorry I didn't watch it earlier, because it happens in the New York that I lived in. So I was living in New York in those years.
You have to look at it this way. It wasn't, you weren't meant to watch it then. You were meant to watch it now. You have to look at how the universe wanted you to watch it now, Lisa. It's fine. It's okay.
I love how you are always the glass half full. Anyway, I'm in the middle of season two right now. And if people are like me and they haven't watched it, you should watch it. I would really recommend it.
That's from awesome. My standpoint. I'm glad you went back and took a stab at that and watched it again.
And here's the sad part. Usually if I don't, you know, usually I'll give a series a whole episode to make a judgment. I gave it 10 minutes and it changed almost exactly when I turned it off is when it switched. But go to see MJ Rodriguez, if for no other reason. That's the main, well, and Billy Porter, the two of them are our main Broadway connections to this. And the other performers are really, really amazing. We should say it's a Ryan Murphy project.
It's like it's a Ryan Murphy.
And I noticed that Janet Mock is an oftentimes director of series, and Janet Mock is a big trans advocate and activist and personality, trans herself. So Pose, worth seeing, worth striking a pose over.
This was a nice little segue. I didn't expect to hear this today. This was lovely.
See, well, let's just jump right into our interview with Laura Haddock and Jen Hartman Luck about Austin Playhouse returning to indoors in a theater.
More live performance.
Yep, coming right up. Here it is. Nicole Shiro, I know one of your favorite musicals is by Frank Wildhorn.
Which one?
The Civil War.
The Civil War. I was about to say, it's kind of really the only one.
I think that's the only one, because every one of his other shows, well, all of his shows, including The Civil War, have flopped.
Well, the Wonderland Alice one I kind of like, but The Civil War is special, and I don't think people understand it enough or know it enough, but yes.
Well, I think that there will be a new favorite on the horizon for you.
I believe so. It kind of already is with the little bits and pieces that I know. It's very exciting.
Exactly. Well, Austin Playhouse has teamed up with Jen Hartman Luck, and they are producing The Battlefields of Clare Barton, a brand new musical. And we're fortunate enough to have Laura Haddock here. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
And Jen Hartman Luck herself on with us on the Zoom. Hi. we were talking before we went on the air. Jenny, you and I have known each other for a long time, but you've never been on the show, which I find amazing.
So crazy. So happy to be here.
I'm glad to have finally have you here. So tell us about this show that you've created.
Absolutely. So I am working in deep partnership with playwright Susan Zeter on this piece.
You've worked with before, correct?
Yes, we have. We wrote Gretel the musical together along with an incredible community of folks, including Jason Tremblay. But yes, this is a piece that is Susan Zeter and Jen Hartman Luck. And we really became partners on this project after Susan had been dreaming about this musical for a couple of years. She had started it, did some very, very intimate workshops. I want to say 2014, 2015. She started really dreaming up ideas around what this could be. That might even be early, but she was working on it. And she had actually brought in a different composer at one point to start working on it. And it just was not matching up. And when we had such an incredible experience together working on Gretel the musical, she asked me to, you know, would you be interested? And there was no question. Not only was I excited about working on another project with Susan, but the opportunity to tell this particular story about this particular woman who is incredibly complicated and brilliant and challenging and messy and just all the things that women are today and 150 years ago and beyond. It just was an absolute thrill. So,
and so I can honestly say without a great deal of pride that I, like probably most people in this country, know that Clara Barton formed the Red Cross, but that's about as much as I know. Yes. So, and that happened during the Civil War, correct?
Very much so. So it was the American Red Cross. Mm-hmm. There were definitely branches of the Red Cross across the globe. But she is most known for starting the American Red Cross, but also she is often referred to as the Angel of the Battlefield. She was a Civil War era, we call her a nurse, but she actually wasn't a nurse. She was just someone who wanted to help.
Yeah.
And was constantly told no, because she wasn't formally of any system. She was truly a person who just wanted to get out there. She saw things happening and didn't understand why there weren't more supports in place, why there were no hospitals. You know, the North thought this was going to be a 30-day little fight out in the fields and it was going to be over. There were no hospitals. There were no systems in place. Clara Barton is responsible for creating the idea of dog tags and an identification system for the men who were out at war. None of the women knew where their men were. They didn't know if they were gone, if they were captured, if they were coming home. She wrote directly to Lincoln and was able to receive permission to do so. She's responsible for first aid kits. They didn't have any sort of first aid kits on them. She this history of what she did, both in the US and then after the war, she was on missions across the globe, doing incredible work around health and wellness and safety and care during natural disasters. So, yeah.
And I'm handsome.
Fascinated by her. So this excites me. As a child, I learned about Florence Nightingale, but then when I learned Clara Barton, I was like, wait, there was an And so this got me very excited. She's so much more than what you think she is. And so, yay.
I mean, she was also fighting she was a social justice advocate from the beginning. Yeah. She fought for rights for women and wage equality for women, even in the 1800s, she was like fighting this fight. She also was fighting against the incredible racism, of course, slavery. She was advocating for Black bodies. Contemporary of Susan B. Anthony. And actually a lot of folks would imagine that they were closely tied. And the thing was, during the 15th Amendment, one of the biggest concerns that Clara Barton had was if we add women to the vote along with Black men, it would fail completely. And then Black men, the slavery would come back into effect, basically. And she demanded that women, she was like, we have to keep women. We will get the vote. We will get the vote. It'll take 40 years, but we will get the vote. But if Black men don't get the vote on the 15th Amendment, then they will go back into slavery. And so she also struggled with severe mental illness, which is really also, that's why we call it the battlefields of Clara Barton. Many battlefields that are great Clara Barton fights.
So this production that's going to happen at Stateside is a workshop, so work in progress. So we as the audience, and I do have my ticket, get to watch a work in progress. And Laura, you are directing this. And I found it interesting. Now, I don't know anything about the piece, obviously, because I've never seen it. But all the performers are women or women identified, playing multiple roles. Can you tell us how that is? Is that the way the piece is written, or is that the way the concept of this particular production?
That's absolutely the way the piece is written. And it's one of the things that I loved about it from the get-go. And so about half the women play Clara at some point in her life, and about, and the rest of them, half the women play everyone else. And even some of the Claras double as other characters, as Susan B. Anthony and other historical figures that Clara encountered. And so, so that was in there from the get-go with this piece.
I don't know. I think you should have taken credit for it. I would have.
I thought of everything, Lisa. Everything you love is from me, who came in just a couple months ago to this process. No.
So this
and
is
Susan have created such this incredible piece. And when Jen and I started talking, and then I read where it was, and I just basically asked her how Austin Playhouse could support it. And I said, you know, what is the most, because it's also been in development with the American Music Theater Project out of Northwestern University. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have a workshop production in the fall as well. And so it was really, what can Austin Playhouse come in with at exactly this time that will help advance, advance the piece?
Well, that's great. And I think the Chicagoland area is a perfect place to do it, because, you know, they've often called Chicago and Austin, the Twin Cities. So I think it's very apropos. So this is a musical, billed as a musical. Would we expect this to be a musical as we would expect an American musical, in the music advances the narrative?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in That's, fact, we- yeah. Go ahead, Laura.
I was just going to say that was one of Susan's rules for herself with paring down the book for this production, where we're focused on the music in this workshop, but we still have a lot of that story there. But that the music drives everything.
So
and it's got a how would you describe it, Jen? It's got a rock, a folk rock. I usually say it's rock and folk rock and a little bit of historical for flavor, kind of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I write everything on guitar. So my aesthetic, I always used to, my aesthetic is theatrical folk rock is what I call it. Because it's deep.
TFR, we call that.
TFR, thank you. Thank you. The TFR, you got it. I love that.
So it's an industry term.
Perfect. Done. That's it. You know, and I, as I'm starting to think about where we want this to go, I do believe that in 2021, we cannot have a musical about Clara Barton set during the Civil War era that is anything but a very contemporary, modern, kind of edgy approach. You know, and my work is very kind of folky. There's certainly streams of country that come in and out of there. We do have some references to Gottschalk, who was a kind of Civil War era dual, sometimes four-handed piano, ragtimey vibe, you know, so every so often we get some of these historical references. I don't want us to forget, we're not trying to forget that we're traversing the Civil War in that time. So we're going to have some snares. There's going to be some fun moments when it feels like we're on that battlefield. And then all of a sudden, bam, we're in this very kind of heavy rock, folk rock energy, and lots of women singing their faces off.
Cool. Can you, Laura, tell us a little bit about your cast? And then include also, oh, go ahead.
I'm so excited about this cast. We have Laura Huffman Powell, who hasn't been on stage in a hot second, but is one of my favorite performers in town. Sarah Marie Curry just got added to our roster. And we have Sarah Fleming Walker. We have all the Sarahs and Sarah Zarang. We have, I just realized we have three Sarahs. Let's see, Esme Beale, who's fantastic. We have a 11-year-old who will also be appearing in the Chicago workshop, Bella, is it Willette? Is that how? Bella Willette, who's just a fierce performer at 11. Let's see, who else do we have? Claire Grosso from the Austin Playhouse, and Michelle Alexander and Charlotte Brooks. So it's a really lovely group.
Amazing. And will the music be performed live?
Yes.
Yes.
Tell us about the instrumentation, any of the players that you want to feature.
Absolutely. So we have Lena Gabrielle, who is going to be our music director. She just finished a pre-Broadway run in New York with Susan Stroman and is coming back to Austin. She's kind of bouncing between Austin and New York City these days. And I'm so thrilled to not only get to introduce her to the Austin community, but to get to have her energy on this particular project. She was music directing Emoji Land off Broadway when COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So she became
a COVID
refugee. And now she loves Austin too much to leave. I love it. But the band, we have Adam Sultan on guitar. We have Richard Hartley on percussion and Gary James Calhoun on bass. Three incredible men who have helped with this project in different capacities. UT Austin has been able to support ongoing workshops in the Department of Theater and Dance. We've done about three different workshops over the years. And so it's great. Richard Hartley has been on a couple of those. Michelle Alexander's been on a couple of those. Gary James did some sound for us when we were sharing it at Zach in November of, 14 years ago, it feels like. So we've got some of these wonderful musicians coming in to help. So
excited. That is amazing. And so as we start coming back into theatrical life on COVID, I'm very excited. When I saw the tickets go on sale, I hope I was like one of the first to get one so that I could be sitting inside a theater again. But I know that this is coming up really soon. What are the dates?
July 11th, 12th, and 13th. And that's a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So some folks might look at their calendars and double guess that. But it's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday at Stateside at the Paramount.
Right. And this is still socially distanced, correct?
Right now they're at 50% capacity. So that's where the Stateside folks have decided to land right now.
Okay. And what is there a mask policy?
I believe at the current moment, it's your mask when you're in the building, but you can remove your mask when you're in your seat.
When you're seated.
They send all that information is on their website, and they also send it out to folks in the, before you go.
Correct.
Yep. Before you go.
And just the last thing I'll take. So coming back to the State Theater, is this because you worked in the State for a long, long time, Laura? How does it feel coming back? Have y'all started working in the space yet?
We haven't. No, we actually won't be there till right before we open. So okay. I have a walkthrough. I worked at Brock's office managed, and then was in publicity at the State Theater when its renovation was going on. So when it became a live performance venue, I was the person standing outside the doors at 6 a.m. in the morning as carpet was being laid in the interior the day that it was reopening as a theater, saying, oh, it's totally going to be done. Everything will be fine. We're great. And I performed on that stage a lot. So I'm familiar with the venue and really excited to have some live theater in there.
Me too. I've got a fondness for the State. I've done several things in there as well. So I'm excited to sit in the audience. I find it of the older and bigger theaters, it's one of the more comfortable to sit in as an audience member. So great. So remind everybody again the dates and where they can go to find information.
It's July 11th through 13th, and you can check out one of two websites, either the austinplayhouse.com or Jen, it's austintheater.org.
Austintheater.org. Yes. I also spent 10 years working for the Paramount. So it's so exciting to get to bring my work back there. But yeah, it is a great listening room. And yeah, austintheater.org for the ticketing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. And I am really looking forward to seeing the show.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to have you in a live audience with us.
Yay! All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Y'all.
That was a fun interview.
It was a fun interview. I need to know, you made it sound like I'm like this giant Civil War Frank Wildhorn fan. And I just need to note this. That cast specifically was so talented that made things magical.
I appreciate that. And I understand that, but there was a period of time, and I would say we haven't talked about it in a long time, but I think it was mostly when Wildhorn had some stuff going up on Broadway, but you did a fair amount of chatting about that show.
You know why? Cause it looked at things from different angles. I haven't seen it in so long that I may change my perspective on things, but that cast was so great and it told the story. It wasn't a one-sided white person's telling of the story, if that makes sense. It was different voices, different opinions, different lenses. And I hadn't seen something told like that on the Civil War, that, you know.
So I do have my ticket.
I'm excited about this Battlefields, because can we talk about this cast? Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I have my ticket, so I'm looking forward to going.
I know, I was excited you're already going. I was like, woo, Lisa is excited.
So let's talk about some other things that we got going around the world of theater. Book of Mormon is set to reopen. And I wanted to talk about this for a little second. Because
changes. Aren't they doing the changes? I heard that Trey and Matt were coming in.
Yes, they're talking about it. So they've announced the opening on November 5th. So they are going to, Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and Robert Lopez, who created it, sit down with the cast. They received and mail from specifically their cast members of color saying that they didn't like the way the Ugandans were portrayed. So they're going to try to fix that. There are people that believe that there's no amount of fixing will do that. I recently listened to a podcast from people, and I will say that these are people that tend to, so on the continuum between people that think that everything's got to be 100% perfect in our new world, our new racial world, and people that think everything was fine back the way it was in the 60s, on that continuum, these people tended to skew more towards the people that everything needs to be perfect right now. So their option is don't open it at all. Secondarily, they said, and this I don't believe, they feel that when Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and Robert Lopez sit down with the cast, that the cast will not feel safe enough to be candid with them. And I don't think that's necessarily true.
I think if they wrote them already to approach it and say, can we have a conversation, then they want to have a voice. Like they feel, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
I agree. The thinking is, do you trust that person that holds your job at stake? And I say, yes, sometimes. Scott Rudin notwithstanding. but I think it's interesting. I was one of those people that really loved the show. I can also see, in light of how we all know things now, that that it has problems. And so hopefully they'll fix it. Speaking of trans performers, the Actors Theater of Louisville is going to do a version of The Wolves with a completely trans cast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Someone was doing The Wolves, but I didn't see any of the casting. This is the soccer piece, right?
Correct. That was done
Hyde
here.
Hyde Park did it?
Hyde Park, yep. So I think that's great, especially in light of what's been going on in Kentucky and other things against trans people.
Louisville does good work too, so I'm not surprised it's them.
They do indeed. And it's going to stream on June 29th, right around the corner from us.
That's next week.
And it is, the proceeds are going to go to the American Civil Liberties Union of Kentucky.
Oh, interesting. I love it. They're making a fundraiser out of it too.
They are indeed. So other stuff that I know interests you, on November 15th at the Gershwin Theater, there's going to be a ceremony for the induction of the 50th Annual Hall of Fame for Lifetime Achievement. And those people that are going to be recognized are Leslie Uggams.
Leslie Uggams.
Mm-hmm. Alan Menken and Lynn Nottage. I think that's just a great,
I was like, those are three, like, really va-va-boom.
I didn't come up with that word, but I wish I had.
I haven't said that in it forever, but it's fun to say.
Va-va-boom.
Va-va-boom. Could be the name of our next musical.
And our final thing, we'll leave it on an up note. The Jimmys are going to be happening on July 15th.
Didn't that make you happy? I saw it in the little subject and email and over, and I was like, woohoo!
It did. We love the Jimmys. The Jimmys, for those of you who don't remember, are the National High School Musical Theater Awards. and the equivalent of the Heller Awards here in Austin. And what's amazing, and unfortunately I can't do it by memory, perhaps you can, that so many of these kids that win these Jimmy Awards, and we should say these are high school age people, have gone on to great careers on Broadway.
Yeah, I can't remember them all offhand, but I mean, one of the females who won like 2 years ago went right into Mean Girls starring as Regina George right before the COVID shutdown. So, I mean, they're everywhere.
With that, we'll say goodbye. You spent another hour with us. You can find all the information on the stuff we talked about on offstageonair.com. And we will see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. Bye.